And at the end of the day, water is the core of everything. So survival for humans, organisms, for the ecosystem, and for the hydrological cycle. So this is why we need to bring awareness to the importance of water, because our lives are surrounded by water and water is surrounded by us.
I'm Mai Frank, and you're listening to This is Lausanne, a podcast all about amplifying the voices of incredible changemakers across the Lausanne community. Welcome to a special episode of This is Lausanne, where we celebrate and honor World Water Day. Today, we're joined by Janelle Aziz, a master's candidate in civil engineering at Lausanne. Beyond her academic pursuits and research in water remediation, Janelle is passionate about connecting sustainability in engineering to combat against social issues.
Hi, Janelle. Welcome to This is Lausanne.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. So to start off this episode on World Water Day, Where did your initial passion for civil engineering come from?
Yeah. So when I was younger, I've always had a passion for math and science, but I've also really liked building things. But also on top of that, I was always like passionate about societal issues. So inequitable healthcare, sustainability, all of that. So like the one thing that kind of meshed all those three components together was civil engineering. And it wasn't until later in my years of my undergrad is where I actually realized like it was actually very interconnected. And yeah, that's kind of how I ended up in civil engineering.
That sounds like a meant to be program.
Yeah, it really was, yeah.
So how come you chose Lausanne to study civil engineering?
So I actually went to an open house at Lausanne and just to check out the programs and to meet some of the professors. And they were telling me, yeah, like it was a newer program. So the classes were smaller, which I really do like because it makes it more one-to-one conversations with professors, which I do enjoy. But yeah, like they sold me on the program and I was like, okay, plus the building is beautiful. So I was like, you know what? It's a win-win for me.
So apart from your keen interest in civil engineering, You also have a real passion for the environment. Could you take a moment to share with our viewers why environmental engineering is so important?
So environmental engineering is all about protecting and preserving the environment. So that includes designing solutions to mitigate or prevent environmental problems like oil spills. But it also means you're also creating solutions to promoting sustainability. So that includes like policy work and talk to the government about all of that. So everything really depends on the environment, especially our health and well-being. So if the environment is not okay, that means we're not okay. So that is why environmental engineering is so important.
So speaking of which, could you explain what exactly World Water Day is all about and why it holds such significance?
Yes, so World Water Day is all about bringing awareness and collaboration of many groups, so including policymakers, researchers, communities, to come together and discuss the importance of water and why we as humans need to conserve and manage this resource efficiently. So this day brings collaboration to addressing challenges of water scarcity, pollution, and inequitable access to clean drinking water. And at the end of the day, water is the core of everything. So survival for humans, organisms, for the ecosystem, and for the hydrological cycle. So this is why we need to bring awareness to the importance of water, because our lives are surrounded by water and water is surrounded by us.
Well, I can tell from our conversation so far that it's really clear you've got a real drive for connecting your learning with real world impact. Can you share a bit more about how your advocacy work aligns with your academic pursuits?
Yes. So due to my passion for protection of the environment, I decided to actually continue my academic journey to a master's to continue learning and working on projects that are about protecting the environment or creating solutions to protect the environment.
Well, now that we've covered that, let's dive into your research project, exploring the effects of geothermal heat pumps and bioremediation on BTEX. Can you give us a breakdown of what exactly you're researching in non-scientific terms?
So imagine you have a plot of land and under the surface, there's groundwater and there's soil. Now imagine that there's an oil spill. So now there's a contaminant leaking into the ground. So now the ground is contaminated, and this contamination can be from gasoline, oil spills, anything like that. So a way to remove these harmful chemicals is through bioremediation. And bioremediation is basically using living organisms, bacteria, microorganisms to clean up the chemicals, and in this case, it's BTEX. So these tiny superheroes, which are the microorganisms, eat up these chemicals to either change to reduce the concentration of the contaminants or to remove it completely. However, these tiny superheroes can take a long time to eat up these chemicals. So we want to add enhancing parameter to increase the speed of it, and that could be temperature. So in my research, I'm using temperature as the enhancing parameter. But the real question is, how can we apply heat to the surface without extensively damaging it?
Right.
And this is where geothermal heat pumps come in. So geothermal heat pumps can be used to heat or cool infrastructure like houses, and they use Earth's natural warmth to heat your home in the wintertime and to cool it in the summertime. So if we were to insert these pipes into the ground, they can create change in the underground temperature, which could have an impact on how these chemicals and organisms behave, whether they stick around or break them down. So basically, my research is all about figuring out how these two things, geothermal heat pumps and bioremediation, work together to deal with BTEX on a plot of land. I'm trying to understand if the changes in temperature is caused by the heat pumps help or hinder the superhero's job of getting rid of these bad chemicals. And this is important because if we can find a way to make these two things work well together, we can have a way to make the environment cleaner and safer for everyone.
So how is BTEX developed?
So BTEX can be found, it's just like a byproduct from industrial processes. So like petroleum, factories, agriculture, like there's a lot of practices that are happening around the world that produces stuff for us, like pipelines as well, that can just leak BTEX into the ground. So that's kind of where BTEX is found. But BTEX also stands for benzene, toluene, ethylbenzene, and xylene. So these four compounds mix together to create BTEX. And that's a very harmful contaminant, especially at high concentrations, because it is very harmful for our humans, and for organisms just to live in. And unfortunately, a lot of industrial processes do create this as a byproduct. So that is why I'm solely focusing on BTEX, because it is pretty common in a lot of like petroleum factories and like mining for oil and all of that.
And does part of your research include testing it out on like an actual little piece of land, or like is it all technical, or do you actually get to like test it out in a lab?
So in the lab settings, I do try to mimic real world scenarios. So I have like, I do my experiments in little bottles. Since I'm specifically focusing on groundwater, I have collected groundwater from an actual source in Canada. I'm spiking it with BTEX concentrations as well as microbes to see how these microbes can reduce this BTEX concentration and if it can actually degrade it. So yes, I actually do kind of mimic in a smaller scale in the lab.
That's so interesting. Yeah. So what are some potential benefits of these types of methods?
Yes, so there is a lot of actually, since it is geothermal, that's a renewable energy source because we are using the Earth's core to heat up or to produce energy for the bioremediation process. So that's kind of promoting renewable energy. And then bioremediation, it is more eco-friendly as a remediation method because it is using microbes, which is a natural source, in comparison to other intensive remediation processes like physical or chemical. So like instead of like excavating the land and like taking up all the dirt from the land, which can be very intensive on the ground itself because you are further damaging it, we are just inserting microbes or using the microbes already existing in the ground to benefit. So yeah, we are using two very more eco-friendly methods. And I think hopefully with further time, this can be developed into a larger scale and hopefully tackle more contaminated sites in the future.
So I was about to say, because it's not such a popular thing, I guess you could say, where do you find it?
The most common remediation methods usually for water is pump and treat. So basically you're pumping the water out of the ground, which sounds very energy intensive for one, as well as it is just harmful. Any remediation method has side effects to it.
Right.
Depending on what you are doing. But it is pretty common specifically within Canada. Since Canada is like a gold mine for oil, we already know like the tar sands, all of that. There's a lot of oil that can be extracted. And unfortunately, all these methods, not necessarily the most environmentally beneficial, because we've seen on the news oil spills happening, leakage from pipelines. So there are remediation methods in place for these, but sometimes it is very costly to remediate these sites.
So essentially the pros outweigh the cons here, even though there are side effects.
Yes. No matter what, any process there will have side effects. What really matters is how harmful these side effects are. Like, is it a larger scale? Is it a smaller scale? And if we can mitigate these side effects.
Other than BTEX, what are some of the most common sources of groundwater contamination in Canada? And what kind of impact do they have on local communities and ecosystems?
So majority of contaminants in Canada are either from agricultural, so like pesticides that leak into the ground. Mm-hmm. There's also a lot of like the industrial processes, like I mentioned before, just from storage tanks that leak, pipelines that leak. There can also be leakage from the landfills that can cause contamination within the soil and the groundwater.
So is that something that companies like put a blind eye to? Like, I don't really understand why develop something that could hurt the environment to mm-hmm. the extent that it does.
So they do have mitigation measures in place. Like, for example, landfills, there are covers and liners to prevent leakages. But sometimes it just happens. Sometimes there's a fracture or there's like a cut in the liner that can cause a leakage to seep out. Or the leachate to seep out into the ground. So there are measures in place, but sometimes you can't always control how these are, because these infrastructures are there for like years upon years. Landfills, they exist for like 50 years plus. And there are monitoring guidelines and everything with respect to that, but sometimes you just can't really predict everything mm-hmm. that can happen. Yeah.
Right. Well, I love your passion for this topic. Looking ahead now, mm-hmm. your commitment to further study alongside Dr. Brar is amazing. Could you give us a sneak peek into what you envision for your future work in this field?
Yes. So after I graduate, I'm either going to work for a consulting company within site remediation, because that's what I'm passionate about, remediating sites. Or I might take the policy and advocacy routes of working for government sectors and like trying to promote and just advocate for inequitable groups, making sure that there are policies that are changing to benefit the state that we are currently in and how we can mitigate the damage already caused by climate change, by companies, by all of that. So I'm still trying to figure out what I want to do with these two sectors, but I think I'm going to go to consulting first before I go to the government side.
Right. Well, I'm sure you're going to make an impact in whichever field path you choose.
Thank you.
Moving on now, sustainability is a really big deal, mm-hmm. and we're curious to hear about how you got involved in promoting it during your time at Lassonde. Could you tell us more?
Yes. So I've done quite a bit of sustainability activities within my years of my undergrad, including being involved within the Club of Engineers Without Borders, but also just around York, I've done a couple of like tree planting activities. I've went to a middle school and I've talked about environmental problems and how we can solve them. So yeah, I've done like a lot of like outreach within the community work, because I feel like that's how you connect with people and that's how you get people to create change. Once you make that first connection with someone in person and then they get the motivation like, oh, this is really cool, let's do this, then it kind of just like spreads out like a tree. Exactly. Like mm-hmm. you just start connecting people and you have everyone that's also passionate by the same passions and you just work right. together. And yeah, just
you build magical. A community.
Yeah, it's great.
So we're actually going to touch on those two things that you mentioned, but starting off with the middle school topic, mm-hmm. you've had the opportunity to present in two different schools your passion for environmental engineering. Can you tell us more about this project, how it came to be and what it entailed?
Yeah, so I went to two middle schools this year to present. One of them was actually about sustainable transportation and the other one was more about environmental engineering. And there I was talking to a group of grade sevens about oil spills and what they are and how can we clean them up. So I had a hands-on activity with them mm-hmm. and they were trying to clean up an oil spill and they're realizing like, yeah, these like methods of like scooping it out doesn't work. So it was just great to see them thinking of how they can clean up an oil spill and then realizing, oh, this is actually harder than it looks. And the main goal of that activity was to show that oil spills are very costly to clean up. And it takes years sometimes to clean up as well due to just the residue and the effects it has on the environment. And seeing them understand that and that there needs to be better mitigation measures in place to prevent this, to reduce all those harmful effects, is the main priority. So The activity went great. The students loved it. But yeah, it was a great experience for them and for me as well to see how bright the young generation is and how interested they are in these kind of issues as well.
Speaking of impact, now we're going to move on to the second topic that you previously talked about. Mm-hmm. You not only help, you know, the community in general, but you also help out the York community, which is fantastic. How did you contribute to the celebrations by tree planting at Glendon and Keele?
Yes, so I've kind of actually made a tradition within myself. For the past 3 years, I believe, I've been planting trees around York, not just for like, oh my God, this is so cool, I'm planting a tree, but like just for like community building, because I really enjoy York's campus. It has greenery. I love walking around it. It's my go-to thing to do every day. I go for a walk every day, and I like to see York being greenified. And for me to want that, I would also need to participate in that. So that's kind of my logic. If I want to see something, I need to do it myself. And thankfully, York hosts these tree planting activities or these group days where you can just go out, plant trees around the campus just so it can grow in the future and help make someone else happy. Who knows? But yeah, I just love participating in activities that promote sustainability and greenifying the environment around us.
And how has that influenced your perspective on water conservation and environmental management, tying the two topics together?
Yeah, so trees are so important for water management because it can reduce flooding, for one, because let's say it's raining, the trees can help deflect or slow down the water from hitting the pavement to going into the sewers. So that can reduce flooding. So having trees, it has such an important role on our water cycle and reducing disasters like flooding, or it also helps with stormwater management as well. Like there's just so many benefits of having trees around that can prevent disasters happening.
So did you notice, like, over the last few years, if there's been more participants in this tree planting community, or if it's, you know, the same few people?
For sure. I think the first time I did it, there was not as many volunteers, but this year when I did again, like, it was right behind Burge by the Stong Pond, and there are so many volunteers, and it was great to see because you had like some professors there, you had students, you had grad students, you had staff from York all there to plant trees by the Stong Pond. And it was great to see because it just looks like a community coming together to benefit the community. And it was, yeah, it was beautiful.
Yeah, we definitely can't do it without our community. So now looking at the bigger picture, what role do you think universities and educational institutions can play in promoting water conservation and addressing environmental issues like sustainability? How can they inspire and mobilize students and faculty members to act?
So I do know there are clubs on campus that do help promoting this, like Regenesis, York. I believe the sustainability office also promotes a lot about these activities, and I think they're doing a great job in promoting it, because once you promote it to one student, then they can promote it to their friends.
Right, word of mouth.
Exactly. And that's what I've seen what's been happening, because even for the tree planting, I was telling my friends, I was like, hey, yeah, I'm going to go plant a tree in the back of Burge. And they're like, wait, what? And I was like, yeah, come along. So they joined me. But yeah, I think York is making great strides to water conservation and environmental management, but I do think there needs to be more discussions about this. So hosting like webinars on water conservation with clean drinking water. Recently, there was a panel of leaders who was talking all about this, and I think this needs to be more common because it creates a lot of discussions within the campus, and discussions are important to creating progress.
So now let's switch topics to Engineers Without Borders, or EWB for short. Maybe our listeners have heard of Doctors Without Borders. Is EWB similar?
Yes, it's actually very similar. EWB's vision is about engineering an equitable and sustainable future for marginalized people and the planet. So very similar to Doctors Without Borders. And here at York, I'm actually the current president of Engineers Without Borders for the school year. But I also was a past president. And I think it's a great club for aiming to creating systemic change through community-driven collaboration. And we do this by mobilizing the engineering community and leveraging technological innovation to address global challenges in Canada and beyond. However, Engineers Without Borders is not only for engineers. It we welcome a whole variety of students because it brings different mindsets to discussions. Like I mentioned before, we need to discuss about how we're creating change, and having a wide panel of different perspectives helps in creating a more sustainable product or design or mitigation measure.
Well, congrats on the president position. That's huge. You. So what initially drew you to get involved with Engineers Without Borders?
Yeah, so it's kind of like civil engineering. It combines social issues with engineering. So STEM and social issues, either way, no matter what, it's interconnected. Every solution, every design you make is going to benefit, hopefully, mm-hmm. a community. Specifically with Engineers Without Borders, you're trying to help out a marginalized community. So those who don't get prioritized when it comes to policymaking. So making sure their voices are heard and you're prioritizing them when creating solutions. So that's kind of how I got involved, because I've always been passionate about sustainability, about advocacy, about the environment, about Indigenous folks and their well-being. So having a platform where I can vocalize and promote and address the issues that they're facing on a global scale is kind of what drew me into Engineers Without Borders. That's why I continue to be a part of it, because it's such a great organization.
And there also is a lot of responsibility, you know, as being the president. So how do you promote the importance of sustainable practices within the engineering community, particularly concerning water conservation?
The way that I promote the importance of sustainable practices within the engineering community is through events. So for example, when I was president back a couple of years ago, I spent the month of March dedicating to sustainability. So I did workshops on how to be sustainable within your own home, how to be sustainable within your own, like just like living, like how to be zero waste or stuff like that. And those kind of basic disciplines kind of can overlap with any part of your life. So this year, I want to do a research project with the club to hopefully create something or help develop a solution for a marginalized community.
So for any of the viewers listening who are interested, mm-hmm. how can they get involved with EWB? Because it sounds like a really important movement to be a part of.
Yes. So EWB Canada has their own like website and Instagram, where they do a lot of the advocacy. If you want to be specifically involved with the York chapter, you can reach out to the York chapter through Instagram at EWBYorkU.
Final question. As a civil engineering graduate student specializing in groundwater contamination, what do you think individuals can do on a daily basis to contribute to sustainable and clean water? Are there any simple practices we can implement that can make a difference?
Yes. I feel like actually, all of the work around sustainability and clean water is always has to do with the consumers. But I feel like the main thing that we actually need to talk to is about the companies that use so much larger volumes of water. A way that students or just anyone can start making changes in their own lives about conserving water is, for one, stop taking like an hour shower. You do not need to take an hour shower. Or if you do, turn off the water, shampoo your hair or whatever, turn it back on. You don't need to waste water. Just notice how like every day you use water, from the toilets, from when you're brushing your teeth, from when you're showering. Just see how they are. And then maybe if you're more interested and you have access to this data, look into how much water it takes to flush a toilet. And then understand that if you flush a toilet 3 times a day, let's just say, that's the amount of water you're using for that. And there are other ways to conserve the amount of water. So some people have more efficient toilets. Obviously, these are can be costly, but just be mindful of how much water you're using. And then see around the world how much water other people use for their lifestyles and compare that and see how we are living as a society versus other people who don't have those resources. Because myself, I'm a privileged person to have access to a house, to have access to clean drinking water. There are a lot of people that don't have access to these minimal basic needs. Right. And I think it's important that we all take a time, just maybe read an article about water consumption or about how someone else is living around the world, to actually understand we have a lot going for us and we can make a difference for these people who don't have the resources to make change within their communities. Other ways you can conserve water or conserve the planet which I think is maybe a better way, is use a reusable water bottle and just fill it up, because microplastics that are caused from water bottles are creating such a big issue now, and they're getting into our bloodstreams. So I think it's just about being mindful about our own consumption and taking the necessary step to learn and walk in someone else's shoes is what's important to understand sustainability and conservation of water.
Right. Well, I definitely agree with that, because I definitely think that being self-aware and being educated is always the first step to bringing about this discussion and to see effective change. So with that, that's the end of the episode. Janelle, thank you so much for sharing your insight, your knowledge, giving some advice. I definitely think you're going to impact and inspire many, not only students, but just people in general. And yeah, that's all I got.
Thank you so much for having me. And it was a pleasure to be on this podcast to share my passion.
Thank you, Janelle. As we conclude this World Water Day episode, I think that each of us should take a moment to reflect on the impact we can make in our own communities, whether through small daily actions or larger initiatives. Remember, the journey to a better tomorrow begins with the choices we make today. Thank you for joining us on This Is LaSonde.